welcome to the Planning Commission. Today is August 18th, 2015, and the time is approximately 7 o'clock. The first item on our agenda is public comments, and nobody has signed up for that, so I will close that portion of our meeting. The second item on here is public hearing, the preliminary plans for Rosegate at Cedar Gate Development. I am going to change that, and the public hearing will be after item number 3 on our schedule. This will give everybody the opportunity to see what is going on, and then they can make appropriate comments at that point.
You need a motion to do that.
No, I don't. I checked that already.
We need a motion to adjourn to
published agenda.
Do I hear a motion? I guess we don't have anything. I move that we change the item public hearing to be after item number 3 on the agenda. Can I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Hang on. Discussion.
Discussion.
But. So the public hearing takes place after we make a recommendation?
We don't make a recommendation. It's after the presentation.
Number 3 is review and recommendation.
I know. It's going to be after the presentation. Then we'll make a...
Okay. You're saying public comment will occur during sections or not after?
No, I'm saying it's moving to after item number 3. This gives the people the chance to make their presentation. And then this will give the people an opportunity to respond on the presentation, and then they'll come back to us for our discussion. Any further questions?
Yeah, I thought that's the way it was.
All we're doing is just moving it.
We're moving the presentation.
Okay.
Before the public hearing.
Okay. Yes, you can say it that way.
I thought presentations were part of the public hearing.
Not to my knowledge.
No.
Anyway, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Motion fails. It's okay, we'll go with this. Public hearing is now open. We have nobody that has signed up for public hearing, so it is now closed. Next item on here is review and recommendation of preliminary plans for Rosegate at Cedar Hills Development, located at approximately 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive in the SC1 commercial zone. Chandler?
Before we dive into this, I understand that we've had some issues with sharing the packet online.
Somehow I didn't get it.
You didn't get it?
Others did.
Others did. Some did, some didn't. So,
got a hard copy.
Okay. What I was going to say is with the council, what we've done in the past, what we set up a couple years ago was everyone had a Dropbox folder, and we just moved everything over to Dropbox, and you see an alert on your email that tells you that somebody's added something or has invited you to share a folder on Dropbox. And we can help you set that up. But I think I'd like to move to that direction, because I think sometimes our emails are getting hung up by the size of the files that are being sent out or received, and so it's almost like a governor's system's on there that's saying this file is rejected or this email is rejected. So I'd like to set that up going forward just so that we avoid any of the confusion here, because I know we've tried to send this packet to Mr. Driggs here for 3 times, I believe, and I didn't get a single one of them. So, but luckily Facebook posted it, so it was on Facebook. Thank you to Councilmember Reese. So he's able to look at it. So what we have before us tonight is the review recommendation to the council on the preliminary plans for the Rosegate facility located at 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. I just wanted to give some background for anyone in the audience that isn't already semi-familiar with the project. I think most of everyone here is, but either way, we'll proceed. The proposed congregate care facility is located at 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. The project encompasses a parcel owned by the Smart family, totaling 11.44 acres. This parcel is located entirely within the SC1 commercial zone, with the property being subdivided into two subzones, the mixed-use office retail and the neighborhood retail zones. The Rosegate facility and its adjoining parking stalls and open space dedication, proposed open space dedication is located entirely within the mixed-use office retail subzone. The portion of the Smart property that is located within the neighborhood subzone is being used or proposed to be used for three retail pads that would be discussed at a later date. So over the past 2.5 years, I believe, closing in on 2.5 years, we've heard a number of concerns, a number of questions come up from whether it's the public, this Planning Commission, or the City Council regarding this proposal, and I wanted to just kind of go through and address those or talk about them, how they relate to, possibly relate to city code, what interpretation there is open on these issues. So I've kind of just made some notes here. I'd like to start with traffic. They did provide a Hills Engineering traffic study that was performed. They found that the peak study or the peak hour of traffic at that intersection at 4600 West and 4800 West and Cedar Hills Drive is about 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. That's because that's when people are going to work and that's when people are trying to get to Lone Peak High School or to Cedar Ridge Elementary School. The traffic study measures a level of service for each intersection, and the level of service is determined by the amount of time an individual would have to wait at an intersection before proceeding or making the turn or proceeding on through the intersection. The current levels of service all rated at an A or a B, meaning that they generally you could expect to wait anywhere less than 10 seconds or less than 20 seconds at an intersection. With the proposed facility, and the increase in traffic that would come along with it, those levels of service don't actually change based on their projections on the demand during this peak hour. You'd still see an A rating, meaning less than 10 seconds of wait time at an intersection, or a B rating, less than 10 to 20 seconds, depending on which intersection you're at. So we don't expect to see any change in level of service at any of the intersections, so we don't expect there's a negligible traffic impact on the area. Another issue that's come up in the past is the parking issue. In that same Hills Engineering study, they did a parking analysis of other congregate care facilities and similar facilities and found that these other facilities needed to be parked. The demand for parking was at about 0.41 or 0.48 0.48 stalls per unit. What the proposed development has is about a one-to-one ratio of stalls to units. They have 294 stalls being proposed. 10 of those are handicapped accessible, along with I believe it's 135 stalls in the adjacent retail zone for shared parking. So they're well above the.
In addition to the
294, the 294 is found solely on that sub district that is adjacent to the building would be considered that building's parking. Any additional parking would be considered either the retail parking or some sort of shared agreement parking, similar to what we have at Lexington Heights in Charleston, where the Charleston shares parking there. So we don't anticipate that that would be an issue either, that you wouldn't see cars parked out on the street. One other issue that has frequently come up, and this is the one that we hear probably the most, is regarding the height of the building. Initially, it was being proposed at five stories, and it's been cut down to three at this point. In the design guidelines, in section 4.3.2, it allows for buildings within the mixed-use office retail development to be erected to a maximum height of 30 feet. Height being measured from the average finished grade to the midpoint of rake for sloped roofs. Meaning that the height is measured to the midpoint of the slope, if you can imagine that. The Rosegate facility, using this measurement of height, measures at 29 feet. That's kind of how I measured it off. Is that correct? I don't know if you have an architect here. It's at 29 feet to the midpoint of roof, so it's under that 30 feet limit. One thing I was looking at, though, in the last couple days was the adjacent neighborhood to the south is in the R1 11,000 zone. In this zone, a home can be erected to 35 feet, but in the residential zone, it's the measurements are different. They don't measure it to the middle of the slope on a roof. They measure it to the ridgeline. So it's 35 feet from the average finish grade to the ridgeline of a roof. If you use this measurement on this building still is only 34 feet. So I think that the height in measuring the impact of height on the adjacent neighborhood, it's no taller than any building in that neighborhood could be anyway. Setbacks. In the design guidelines, it calls for a setback adjacent to any building that's adjacent to a residential zone to be set back at a minimum of 30 feet. This building is set back 90 to 100 feet, and it sets back even further off of 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive, anywhere from 100 to 130 feet, depending on where you are along those roads. I had a discussion with David Bunker, our city engineer, city manager, about the utilities. We've covered this before. I've had concerns raised in the past about does the city have the capacity to feed a building like this? Does the city have the ability to convey water to the building and sewage away from the building? And the sewage, the affluent in the sewer system would be traveling west, out on 4800 West, and the city does have the capacity in the pipes and the size there to feed the building the necessary culinary water that it would require. Additionally, the developer would be conveying any water rights to the city that we would need, and that would be based on the equivalent residential unit, which would be determined after they have a final unit count. And those water rights are, the city is very particular in the water rights that it does accept. We don't take any surface water. We only take it's well water from this aquifer, from water that can be transferred into our aquifer. So that would be a discussion at a future point that would need to be had. But the city does have the capacity to feed that building any utility that would be necessary. The open space. In their previous proposal, when they came to this body, you remember that the building was shaped a bit like a square with a dog leg off to the west, and much of the open space was encompassed in a courtyard in the center of the building, and that would have been great for the residents that lived there, but for the residents of the city, it doesn't really do a whole lot of good because it wasn't visible or accessible in any way for the residents here. The current layout of the building, which Corey will show, has broken up that open space and made it visible to residents from all angles. I think that they've taken the input from the Planning Commission and tried to implement that recommendation as best they can, given the limitations and the shape and the size of that lot there. Lastly, I wanted to talk about the lighting. A lot of worry has been had about the noise and the potential impacts on the residents to the south. If you look at the photometric plan, it's the last page of the, I'm sorry, it's not the last page, it's, I think it's L300? No, sorry, it's E100. If you look at the photometric plan, when you see the residents to the south, you see that the light, the parking lot lights, the bollard lights, any outdoor lighting is contained on the property and does not affect residents to the south, so they shouldn't see any, they shouldn't have any effect on them. The city is less concerned about any light that spills out into a public street, as that only, you know, brightens any right away. But even then, you see that the lighting there is fairly negligible. That's my review. I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you guys have had come up in your review of these packets.
Just yes. A quick one on light. Maybe when you present, talk about the buffer along the south side of the property. We'll have vehicles pulling into parking spots, that kind of thing.
Okay. Corey, you'll address that? You'll address that? Okay.
Chandler?
Yeah.
So when you say that it's been deemed or determined that there is enough water capacity, do you have any information around how much capacity? I mean,
well,
as a percentile or how much? I mean, I guess if this goes forward, are we now near capacity? I mean, I guess how much?
I don't
have a sense of what capacity means, I guess.
No, the capacity means that the size of the pipe, you know, having a a quarter-inch pipe or a two-inch pipe, you know, delivers a different capacity than a six-inch pipe. And this building sits next to one of the major intersections in the city, where you have 4600 West on the east side and you have Cedar Hills Drive on the north side. Typically, in those intersections, you have the city's largest pipes, and they can convey a lot of water. And so there wouldn't need to be any the city wouldn't need to go upsize any of those pipes in order to accommodate this building.
So forget the pipes for a minute, the size of the pipe. I'm talking like actual water.
Yeah. At that point, you would need to have the developer would need to turn over the amount of shares, giving the city the water rights to pull from the aquifer the amount of the water that would be needed to feed this building.
Right. So that's my next question is, do we know if there's enough water in the aquifer to feed this building? I mean, have water rights on paper is one thing, but actually have enough water in the aquifer.
Yes.
Has there been a determination around that? Or?
I'm having a hard time understanding your question.
You want us to know if there's
enough David, is in reserves.
Yes, there's water there. I mean, we use plenty of water. I saw the water usage for the last week, and yes, there's plenty of water. So, I mean, people use a lot of water. So there's definitely capacity in the system. And the actual pressurized irrigation portion of the water, they don't have the same. They're not the same as each unit having a quarter acre worth of a quarter acre feet of water to use on a lawn. They're not like a typical resident in that regard. So they'll use mostly culinary water. The facility will use some pressurized irrigation, I imagine, but it won't be anything more than probably a small neighborhood.
So you mentioned a moment ago the developer would need to exercise some of their water rights or shares, right?
Yes. They would need to transfer those over to the city, to the city's ownership.
So do they own water rights and shares already to transfer to the city? I mean, is there anything to transfer to the city?
Well, we don't know the exact number of shares that need to be transferred at this point. So the city hasn't placed any request.
That would be part of the development.
So we give them shares and they give them back. Is that what you're saying?
No, we don't give them any shares. They give us shares.
Okay, so I'm wondering if they have any shares to give is what I'm asking.
That's part of the development agreement.
Yeah. There's shares available.
Okay. That comes after the final approval.
Yeah. So that would be calculated by the city engineer as far as what the demand is and what the need is for that building, and then they would be responsible for finding the shares that the city would accept.
There is a market for water shares. They
there
can
is.
Buy what they need.
Yeah. Are there any?
I have a question.
Yeah.
About the lighting. Is it contained so much, like, as of the Walmart lighting is next to that neighborhood to the north? Is it the same kind of plan to do that? Or you say it's going to be contained and not spill?
My understanding is that you won't see the light pollution spill over, because there's going to be a fence installed as well as part of any development there, whether it's this development or some other development. They'll have to put in a fence. So the people that back up to that development won't have lit up backyards, because light is spilling over into their yard. They shouldn't see any light into their yard.
Are they dark sky fixtures?
I believe they are.
That you're defining?
I believe we've talked about that, and they are.
City standards.
According to the design guidelines, they are dark sky. So it'd be similar to what Walmart has there. And it would be contained, I think, similar to what Walmart's done there on their own side.
With Walmart, we required more lower lights.
Right.
In order to do that. So what it is, they have more lights, but they're lower. Instead of doing, you know, real tall lights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
these are low lights also. I mean,
at one point there were bollards on that south side. I don't know if that's the case anymore. But
no bollards.
But that's something that we can discuss.
Do we know if the neighbors to that north Walmart feel like there's not light pollution?
I've never received a complaint from anyone up on that street. That's in Highland, but I've never received a complaint about it from them.
I had a question about the traffic study.
Yeah.
I don't have it in front of me. I think it was dated February 2014.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was titled Senior Living Center Traffic Study.
Right.
So my question is, and I think back in 2014, there was discussion around assisted living versus congregate care. And I guess my question is when a traffic study is done, is the study done under the prism of this is an assisted living center, as in, or this is a 55 plus senior living center? That's my question. It was done as a
congregate care, and it was done in February. But the traffic study looks at the number of ingress egress points in a project. And that really hasn't changed in this project. So even though the shape and the layout of the building has changed, the egress and the ingress points haven't been altered to a great deal, other than their location along the various roads. So that's why that traffic study can still be valid.
So the building's purpose doesn't have an impact on the traffic study, is that what you're saying?
I think if it did, it would be negligible. I don't know the difference between... I can understand the parking, but the traffic, I think, would be actually probably very similar. So, but if it was done according as a congregate care facility.
If it was performed as a congregate care facility, then assisted living would be less than that. So it's performed about the worst case scenario.
Okay.
191 units.
All right.
I would expect that, because the active seniors would have cars themselves, while an assisted living would not have cars themselves. So if it was performed as a congregate care, you're actually taking up more trips in the study.
So the traffic study had 291 units. Is the basis for that? Is that the same number, similar number? I mean, they have a new building, right? You're proposing to have a new building tonight. So I have no idea how many units.
294.
Okay. So if it's substantially the same as, to use that terminology.
We have space for an additional three more, but we just have to put them.
Right. Okay.
They call it congregate care in the traffic study, in congregate care facilities.
Okay. So it is measured at the higher use. Okay.
That's good. Any other questions?
I do have a question. Is a landscape plan required at this stage?
Yes. It doesn't need to be as detailed as they've provided, but yes. They did. It's L100. Here, I'll let you see it right here.
Okay. I think it's the one I didn't get.
So, did you go through the plan with someone?
I went through it. They do meet the 30% requirement for a project in this zone. They actually are at about 37% for both the retail section and the congregate care section. So you could expect to see 37 to 38% of that project be dedicated as green space. It's not dedicated to the city, but it is a green space. They do use many of the trees from the design palette that's provided in the design guidelines, as well as they follow the instructions or the recommendations on using which kind of trees in planters and adjacent to major roads such as 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. The Cedar Hills Drive trees are actually existing trees. They're not going to be removed. No, so those ones are already there. So yes, they did actually go through that with great detail, and I appreciate that. So...
I'm going to turn it over to the...
Yeah, place. If there's no other questions, I'm going to turn the mic over to Corey.
I look for the conclusion. What's the conclusion?
Well, that's the executive conclusion that's in the beginning. That's about as far as I can.
Can we pull that screen over so that the commission can see it?
Yeah. Are you going to address that in that class?
I will later. I hope they brought it on paper since their machine is not working. Hit it with a hammer.
We'll pay the guys to know where to kick it.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are subsequent changes. I guess we're just approving phase one.
That's chords.
I like that.
Out there,
I don't know. Shuffleboard.
Shuffleboard. I don't know what this is.
Picnic.
And you may want to this way a little bit. Move back to so far.
Would it be inappropriate to make a motion to reopen the public comment?
Thank you.
Still searching here.
Oh, we got his one name on it.
Sometimes we don't define the lies, but this guy happens to be well versed.
We can do anything we want.
That's how we discuss it. It's Mr. Flint's point. Maybe when you
one on the
conditions, when we have
yeah,
so this doesn't come to
and right now I'm being stubborn.
That's a short timer.
We're moving on at a time.
Hold on. Got a short timer at it.
You're going to have this in September because I'm not pleased.
Listen, I'm resigning, of course. No.
We have two meetings in September. I'll be at the first one, but the second one where they'll come up again, I won't be at. We're going to try to push this through. Before you and I leave.
I don't know why it's that long.
That would be nice. Yeah.
Go out there to play. We do have a pitcher. Brought the proper glasses. Still don't help any.
That's lovely. I've got a picture of that.
I do too.
Wow. Thank you for your patience. Isn't technology grand?
What was your name?
Yeah, my name is Corey Shoup. I'm with Blue Line Designs. And I'm grateful to be here tonight. We're back, and we're excited. I say that every time, but it's because we feel like we're getting close over such a long haul. As you all well know, dating all the way back to December 2nd, 2014, the evening at which the City Council determined that congregate care was substantially the same as assisted living, we've been using that direction that they provided, because we were, as you remember, debating, well, if you go even further back, on the 13th of November, we were ready to move forward as an assisted living, but at the recommendation of the city, again, we were asked to reconsider congregate care, which we thought, oh, man, we've already been down this road. Why are we doing this? But we did, and we asked for a finding of fact from the city council. And on December 2nd, they did determine, after discussion, after reading our, it was actually Daniel Zappala of the council that read our definition that we provided, and after some discussion, they did determine that congregate care is substantially the same as assisted living. So with that direction, we have moved forward as congregate care in good faith. And moving then along the timeline, in April, we came back after having worked with you for a while on the new configuration of the building and how things would look. And I was expecting at that time to be where we are tonight and receive a recommendation. But to my surprise, you weren't really pleased with the design of the building. And it wasn't that it was not in compliance, because it certainly was in compliance. But again, you asked us, look, we don't really like certain things about the building. And the main thing was, as Chandler mentioned, a majority of the open space was contained on the interior of the building. And so tonight, after, well, let me continue from that April point. If you'll remember, there was a special committee that was put together to look at how can this building, even though it's in compliance today, how can we work with the Smarts and Doug and Blue to come up with a way to make the building open its open space up so that it can be visible to everyone as you drive by. So we worked diligently with that committee, and it's been a real process, and we are very appreciative of all of the time, donated time, of individuals that have gone to meetings and given valuable input. And tonight, we're presenting that. You all received the proposed configuration and all of the drawings as you require in your checklist for preliminary approval. And that's really what we're here tonight for, is are we still in compliance with your code and your design guidelines? And we've gone through and provided each box. We have checked those boxes over and over and over to make sure that we have provided that. And so for the benefit of you all have seen this, except for those that couldn't get anything other than Facebook to work. you've seen our proposal. You've asked some good questions. But we felt like it would be helpful again to show this presentation to the public so that they're aware of how we've changed the building. What you're looking at here is the Smart property. If I remember right, the Smarts purchased this property in 1987. They've owned this piece of ground for a long time, and they're looking forward to working with us on developing it as well, you can imagine. Last time, if you can see my little red dot, sometimes it's hard, and I'll try and move it a little slower for those in the audience so they can see. This building didn't have this center piece here and this center piece here. Instead, it came here and was enclosed, down here and was enclosed here. And all of our open space was internal to our building, which wasn't contrary to what you would allow here, but your recommendation of, hey, can we break that up? Can we break those facades up and make it visible to everybody? Sure. And that's what we've done. So what you're seeing in the green, this lighter green, is an indication of the subzone of office mixed use. This is the green area here where, as outlined in your design guidelines, is where, well, let me say this. All of your uses within the SC1 zone are all conditional uses. And as you have mentioned before, it was never intended that all the uses that could ever go in here were listed there, and that's why we made the finding of fact that assisted living, convalescent care, and congregate care are all substantially the same. In this light green area is where assisted living, convalescent care, and congregate care are a conditional use as listed in your ordinance and in your design guidelines. And so you can see our building is completely and totally within that approved area, the office, retail office mixed use. The darker green area is your commercial retail, where assisted living is not listed as a conditional use. And so we've stayed out of that area. We do have, as Chandler mentioned, three footprints here of future commercial buildings. We're working on trying to find out who the best tenants are for those buildings. And when that is solidified, those buildings will be custom designed for those tenants, if you will. So
right now all we're concerned about is the cognitive care unit.
Convalescent care, correct. Yep. You can't really read this, but we have calculated all the green here, and as Chandler said, we're on average around 37%, 35 to 37% open space, and your requirement is 30. So again, we've gone above and beyond. I'll go to the next one because it's a little prettier to look at. This is essentially a concept plan that shows some of our uses in these gardens and other areas. You can see from Cedar Hills Drive that runs here to the roundabout that we have broken the building, and you get these vistas down into here, and these actually jog. They're not all on the same plane. This is a pickleball court. This is a little water feature with a larger gathering area for large groups, large families, family reunions. Here's a little barbecue fire pit, similar to ones that we've used in other facilities. On this side, this is also designed for families, but for smaller gatherings, you don't always need a giant space for family reunion. You might be having a family home evening where you want just a small pavilion and you can gather. And over here is a miniature golf. There's two little putting greens here and some bocce ball here, and then a little garden area right here for those that wanted to go out and potentially have their own little garden spot. So, if you'll recall, the building was solid through here. So again, we've broken up this entire facade in an effort to soften that effect on the south. During Chandler's presentation, there was a question, I don't remember who asked it, but a question on lights and parking. This whole area, and you'll see this better as we go through, but this whole area meets your requirements. Again, it's a minimum of 15 feet of landscape between the south property line and the parking. Your requirements, 15 feet, were that or more. And we've also planted it up. But on top of this, right here, there's a little bit of a retaining wall right through here. On top of that is also a solid privacy fence. So there will be absolutely no headlights that penetrate through that. Plus, you've got all the landscaping that will be in that buffer zone and the trees. So absolutely no lights that that glare into the backyard. There are five homes. There's actually six, but this one here doesn't have the building anywhere near it, as opposed to these. There are one, two, three, four, five, and then there's one other home here. So they will all be screened from any light pollution. With that, we have gone above and beyond in an effort to show you what this could feel like and will feel like. What I've done, the next few pictures are samples of a video that we've put together that we'll also play. This is a commercial building that is still undetermined. So if a bookstore comes in here or a subway comes in here, those are two completely different uses. And what uses will be on that second floor, third floor, we don't know. But we threw a building in there so you could start to see size and scale and really the effect. And in the video, we'll start further back on Cedar Hills Drive, and you can start to see this development as you drive towards it. It's very well done. We've got some seating area out here, but again, that will all depend on what the use is. The next few slides, this slide is where we were just looking, was down on this corner. You can see the Walmart in the back. That's that white rectangle. We've pulled that up and placed that in there. But these other buildings would also be commercial buildings. So there's the one we were just looking at, another one, and another one. And you'll get a better feel from this when we run through the video. And again, those have not been designed, but they're part of the property. Now we're going to go through the courtyards. You can kind of get a feel. I showed you those in plan view. This is the large family gathering courtyard, a little water feature or whatever out here. This is the pickleball court. Oh, we're going to turn some lights off. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. One more set, Trent. One more.
I might go to sleep. Perfect. Okay, thank you. This is the east facade. So this will face the business building that's on the corner. I think it's a dentist, and also the Charleston, which is right across from this portion of the building. It's across the street. Again, similar uses. This is looking, obviously all these are elevated as though you're in a hot air balloon, let's say. But this is looking from where the Charleston would be. You can start to see this buffer, which that wasn't the highlight of it. We were trying to show this here. You'll see the buffer a little bit more later on. Again, more courtyards. There's the little putting greens. There's the bocce courts, the gardens, and a sitting area. Another family gathering area. This is the more intimate one. You can only really see one pavilion here, but there are a couple of pavilions back in here. I think there's another one right back in here and one back in there, if I remember right. And then this is the main entrance into the facility that you already saw. We just zoomed in on it so you can see. And as you can tell, we've taken your advice and looked closely at the credit union that was recently approved and pulled some of the architecture from that. From what we understood, you were very pleased with what that turned out to be like. And so we've gone and pulled some of the same elements from that. We didn't want to be exactly the same, but we do want to replicate that. With that, let me jump into, give me 2 seconds here, and I'll run the video. And part of the reason I did this was because the video is motion, and it can be a little tough sometimes to see. Okay, we're driving down Cedar Hills Drive, coming to the approach, the main entrance. I'm going to come in here and get a little closer look at the building, and you can kind of see the other building down in here, and you can get little glimpses of the building back in here. But you can see that whatever we end up doing here is going to play a major role. We're now driving down Main Street. This is one of the potential commercial buildings. You can see our facility back in here. Another commercial. You can see that we envision making this very pedestrian oriented, and then back up you can see the Walmart way back in the back. This is going to take you along Cedar Hills Drive. Obviously we're in the air, but here's courtyard maybe number one, courtyard number two with some pickleball. You can see people actually playing a little pickleball back in there. Now we're on the east side. This is the main entrance, kitty corner from the Charleston and across the street from the business buildings that are there. And then the next run will take you along the back, the south side, and show you the openings to the courtyards along the south elevation of the building. It's going to pause and then take us in here. These are the courtyards along the south side. I think that was bocce ball and the golf and then the family, more intimate family gathering. This jumps back. This is looking down on the commercial, so you can kind of see what pedestrian tables, kind of things sitting out. And then we run it right along Main Street. You can see into the buildings, see people sitting out here. And then finally, back to the main entrance into the building. Okay. So, like I said, our main purpose in providing all of this was to illustrate the massive amount of effort that has been put into making this building more than compliant, and really hearing your requests to break the building up. You can see how those large openings are different than what it was before. It was all a single facade, and passerbys wouldn't have the opportunity to look in there. We're excited about it. We feel good about it. We feel like, well, we've told you in the past with some of the constraints that we were feeling, we were having a tough time turning this into something great. We feel like this is something more than great. This is an awesome facility. We are, as you know, and hopefully as you've had a chance to review, we are totally and completely within your guidelines. I made you that promise almost a year ago that we would stay within your box. We are within your box, and we hope tonight to receive a positive recommendation to go to City Council. And following that is when we anticipate getting into, okay, this is the brick color and into those nitty-gritties. But in order to get it to that point, we need your positive recommendation. Further questions?
I don't think we have any questions, do we?
Impossible.
I have one, Corey. The road, I don't know if you're calling it Main Street or 4700 West or whatever.
Yeah, we don't know what to call it. Yeah, we refer to it as Main Street. So.
Okay, Main Street. Will that be built in prior to developing the retail path?
Yes, that street will be part of the development.
It'll actually be part of the development with the Congress Care.
It accesses the south west corner, as you can see.
Yeah, I saw that.
All that will be part of the initial development.
So the ingress egress are at 2 points
correct.
On the lawn.
Correct. Three if you count the entrance, and then four if you count the other. So we are...
Hold on. So there's the entrance on the east side.
Huh? And then there's another... Oh.
And there's two on the west side.
Correct. Yes, correct. Sorry.
So that's three.
Yep.
Okay, none on the north.
Correct. There's grade change there. You'll remember, we looked at that initially.
It's kind of a mess, yeah.
And it could only be right in, right out, which is also problematic with some of the seniors that we're going to be dealing with. Mm-hmm. And we just felt in the end... that would be problematic and not advantageous. With the grade change and what it did to the site, it wasn't wise.
I have a question. Sorry, Don. As far as, I know we're talking about this building, not the retail pads, but on the retail pads, are they going to have to be three stories high?
No.
Stories? Do you have any
idea? No. We did it that way because, again, we tried to take everything to the max. When we did our traffic study, we did everything to the max. When we did this study, we did everything to the max.
Okay.
It does not have to be three stories. It's purely dependent upon who we can get to sign the dotted line and get them in there. So we'll build it to suit.
And those buildings will come here?
Yes.
Yeah, this is only phase one. It doesn't include the three
paths, right.
Retail. I do have a question about the roadway that comes in from the south side, or the west side, excuse me. It looks like half that roadway is on the adjacent property. Will you make arrangements with the property owner to finish that road, or will we just get paving to the center?
It will be...
Well, we've already spoke with them, and everybody's...
Everybody's cool with it.
I'm sorry, I better speak. Doug Young, Salt Lake City. We've already spoken to the adjoining people, and we'll coordinate that so that whole road is built. And
urban gutter,
yeah,
the property.
Absolutely, yeah.
All the way down to the property.
Yes. Yes.
Where does the other road come in?
Yeah, it's the one that's already partially built by Hartz there, and AmSource has got the backside of that one on their plan.
Okay, where would it come on here? Just
we,
a guesstimate.
Here, I can...
Oh, okay.
If you flip your page, you can see it.
Yeah.
Okay. Chair. Yeah, okay. Right there. Yeah, if you turn the page, it's illustrated on the next page. Yeah. Oh, nope. I don't know how you printed that off. I don't know what order they're in. There you go.
So we can expect that that road going out to 4800, running west out of
47.
Rosegate, will actually be paved all the way to 4800.
Yeah, I don't know what your agreement with AmSource was, but that would be an issue with those folks in Hartz. So I don't know what your agreement is.
AmSource is making those improvements to widen that road to full city specs, so it'll be a full right of way by the time AmSource is done, to the point of juncture with the Smart property.
You say done to spec? You mean completed to spec?
Completed, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened to your pitch on the front? On the top there.
It's still there.
Yeah, but it's a modified one. We like the other one.
What was it that you liked about the other one? And maybe we can work with you in getting it done.
I just thought it was a little more dramatic than this.
Well, not that...
All of that you've got sitting up here is kind of insignificant.
Yeah. Well, and that can be part of the detail that we work through as we move forward. You know, we tried to respect... I offered a couple of meetings ago to completely remove it because it is the portion of the building that goes above your height allowance. But the consensus was in that meeting, please don't. It looks good. So maybe at this point, as we move forward, if we can get a positive recommendation and the city council can give us a head nod, give us a yes on this, then we'll just work with you on.
Have you considered also to break up that roof line there? Additional dormers.
Which one?
To break up the roof line here. I mean, just put in some dormers up there.
Along any of this, your east elevation? Yeah,
yeah, those are all the elevations.
Well, all the elevations.
Yeah, those are details.
Well, there wouldn't be dormers on the north and south.
Well, and those are additional details that we can work through at the final.
I mean, I love the building.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Just trying to.
Yeah. There's things that we'd like to add to it, and certainly I appreciate your input and recommendation on it. And those are all things that we can kind of fine-tune as we go through the stage. We wanted to kind of we worked with your architectural committee, and this is where we got to this point. We're actually here 5 days earlier than we thought. We actually anticipated not being here until the 25th, but they moved the Planning Commission up, and we had a public hearing, so we actually came a little bit early, and so we just made accommodations.
Just a side comment, Glenn, is that the way this building is designed with the peaks, periodic peaks, dormers might not fit in there architecturally.
Well, that's on the back side.
Well, it's on the front side as well.
On the front side, but okay, we're another idea. I don't know. I'm completely out. Maybe out. As every time you have one of these wings that coming out, on the top there, do something to emphasize that, or something up there, you know, so individual, bing, bing, bing.
Right.
Understand?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Idea. Just trying to dress it up, yet make the wing distinctive.
Right.
In itself.
Right. I think that's completely possible.
Either. Any other questions or comments?
I have a few questions and a couple of comments. So on the south side, is there a sidewalk or walkway along the south side?
We're not currently showing it, but yes, we can certainly put that in. We have shown that in the past in the 15-foot buffer.
Right.
We'd be more than happy to incorporate a walk through there.
I think if people are going to walk from that neighborhood to get across there to the cutting through the parking lot, may not be the best.
We wanted to bring into the open space.
Yeah, what our intention was, you'll see that on the corner, the southeast corner of your design there, there's actually a walk that takes you and crosses you over the parking and brings you along the courtyards. Our thought was it would be a much more pleasant walk to go on that side, but if there was a consensus and you felt strongly about putting a walk on the other side, we could do that. We thought it would be enjoyable to walk past and see the water fountain and the gardens or the bocce or the golfing, whatever. You know, we're trying to make it a pleasant walk, and the other one would be as pleasant as well. So whatever.
I would suggest you add one there. Just human nature is to take the shortest route possible, and I think people just probably walk through the parking lot. My views to get to their destination.
And they may. Okay.
But the downside to that is that the residents along that south side may not be real comfortable with people walking along their property line. I know I've personally faced such an issue, and as a resident, I was unhappy about that.
Right.
We talked about those two things. One was disturbing the residents to the south, and the other was if we take that buffer and take 5 feet out of it with a sidewalk or whatever, our plantings or any berming we decide to do, we're left with less space. We can put larger trees in if it's just landscaping. So just you make a good point, Dave, but that was part of the discussion we had before.
Is there a berming there, a raising of the height of the landscape there or not?
That whole area is actually lifted a little bit. As far as putting in a berm, if we did all planting in there, we certainly could put a berm in there. Yeah, but if you did a 5 foot walk, it's too difficult in a 5 foot walk with 5 feet on either side, and sometimes you meander that to get any kind of a berm. When we do berms, we generally don't do them at a slope that's greater than 33% because then it becomes maintenance an issue and water issue.
All right, I withdraw my recommendation.
Okay, I'll scratch it. That was a plus.
So last time you were before, so some discussion around, I forget, were they the telephone lines or the power lines that you were going to talk to the utility and see if you get buried or something?
Yeah, Chandler brought this up, and that was there's existing trees there now, and if we don't do something soon, they're going to start to have to be replaced by somebody because they're going to have to be trimmed back, and that does not look good. So our proposal is, as part of the project, those lines would come down and be buried. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll just make a further comment on that. We actually went to the power company, and we got an amount. It's about $100,000 plus boxes to sink those. We were hoping to have a conversation with the credit union and get them to sink theirs. Then we'll sink ours. And then there's also the power lines on the north side that we'd like to see go away. And the number on that was about $26,000 to sink those. If you've noticed on the entrance to your community here, they've already started whacking those trees to accommodate the power lines. And so they're already chopping them down. Those trees are sycamores, I believe, and those are 100-foot trees. And so we need to get those power lines out of there to beautify the entrance of the city before it's too late, really.
Right.
And then the other issue that we brought up on that was the buried irrigation line. We've talked to the irrigation master that's in the backyards of the residents there, and they've told us that they would abandon that. And so then now people can plant trees along that easement that's there. So those three things.
Another question I had was, there was discussion around coordinating with UTA for a possible bus stop or bus. I don't see anything to do with, bus. I don't know what the solution is, but just curious if anything further was done around that concept or not.
Well.
About to update him.
Working with UTA is another 2.5 year process, but yes, let me just say it this way, David. Demand will drive. When there's demand there, it will drive their decision making. Until then, they won't even give us the time of day.
Is one of your amenities a shuttle that would take them south out of here?
Yeah.
Yes, there will be that.
Exit the train station.
Or west, I suppose.
The parking, is any of it reserved spaces? Are they all open public spaces? Or will there be reserved parking?
The parking that's within the light green area, the retail office mixed use, accommodates the structure, the facility that's there. All the parking in the dark green area, or that Don is flipping to, will accommodate the commercial. So... if I understand your question correctly.
What I'm asking is, pull in the parking lot and it's going to say reserved for so-and-so or unit number so-and-so, or is it just there is no reserved parking?
I don't know if they're marked that way or not. Are they marked?
Yeah.
So there is reserved parking?
Yeah.
Like
not every resident has a vehicle, though, so it's not unit number 101. It'll be have a number, but certain number of parking spaces would associate with their unit number. Some residents may have a vehicle.
Right, so let's say unit number 50 has a parking stall, but there may not be a car there because they have a car.
Correct.
But they have a parking stall.
They could, yes. Not a guarantee, because some say we don't want it, and we have some in our cover that are visitors.
Okay. Right. Where I'm going with my thought process is, and you've done a good job of opening up the building and allowing some gathering space, right? But it doesn't do a lot of good if the public tries to come visit the building and there's all the stalls are reserved for somebody.
Probably not.
So, and I know there's open space on the opposite side of the building, but I don't know if there's a way to open up, some of that.
There's open space. There's parking, guest parking throughout in the reserved areas, to answer your question.
So there are many that are not marked, is it, with the unit number then? All right. How many parking stalls are there in the non-commercial side?
294.
Yep. So there's 291 units and 294 parking stalls, leaving three free to the public. Is that where I'm falling right? Or?
Well, what happens is we're never going to use 294. You see what I'm saying? We're over parked at doing one per unit. Usually you need 0.8 something. So there is slush already in the category. We just have overparked the unit, and we'd like to go with that one per, because there will be some overflow for residential parking.
So if there's a lot of excess parking, then why even have a number? Why not just leave it open for everybody, so that when the public comes, they oh, this, these 10 right here, I can't park there. They're open. I can't park there. I just, if you have that much excess parking space, why even have a number?
That's the way we do it.
Okay.
People like to know where they're going to park.
Huh? That's a good answer.
All right. Moving on. The one question I had was, just to be clear, the commercial pads we're calling, kind of, I guess we're calling it phase two now, is not part of your application right now. Is that right? Or is it part
the
of it?
The architecture for that is not.
But the approval of it is, the, right?
Of where they're located, yes.
Okay. So you're looking for approval location, but not the architecture. I just want to make sure I was getting that.
Yeah. So for example, when we meet with meters and meters choose spot number two,
yeah,
then we'll come back with that actual footprint and say, okay, this is meters. This is what we've done. This is the architecture, and go through the process on that piece of architecture, essentially.
So are you gonna build these buildings and then add architectural amenities to it, or are you not going to build them at all until you find a tenant?
The latter.
Okay. Did you submit with your application a list of services you intend to provide?
That's not a requirement on your checklist, and
right,
we have provided that in the past.
Right.
But as far as you're in the box, it's not part of the checklist, so it's not part of the submission.
Right. So as you know, assisted living in congregate care is substantially the same as assisted living, and assisted living has criteria, right? You have to provide certain services in order to be considered assisted living. And I brought this up before, and now I know you've come before and you had a list you read of things you were looking at doing, but yet to hear of things you intend to do. And without such a list, this is essentially a residential community. I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is without your commitment, I know it's not part of the official checkbox and whatever form you filled out, but without that, we're here basically without any commitment or assurance that part of your application process is to do assisted living services.
That's not true, because the city council made a finding of fact that congregate care is substantially the same as assisted living. So
that, right.
So that's settled with that finding of fact.
Right, but I don't know, there's a list, now you have this list for the state, there's like a dozen or so services that the state considers that one should do to be assisted living.
That wasn't included with the motion to the finding of fact of the city council.
Right, but they have to demonstrate that they are substantially the same as assisted living.
No, it's already been determined. That was determined December 2nd when the city council approved that motion. We're not determining that. That was determined.
I understand that.
Did you ever do a motion?
I understand that. Okay. What I'm saying is I don't know what services they intended to deliver whatsoever. They might do one out of 12. I guess I'm saying is that they've applied to build a building to put people in, but there's nothing here with the application indicating what services they intend to deliver. So I'm just a little concerned about that we're going to take on good faith that they really will actually deliver those services.
They are listed in the definition, and we have that here again tonight, but it was also read the night that city council determined that congregate care was substantially the same as assisted living and convalescent.
Mm. So you're on record.
From a use point.
Not from
correct. Correct.
One-on-one.
Yeah, they read the whole list and during that meeting. I listened to the whole
thing. They're not going to have a doctor on board. They don't have to.
Right.
It was really boring.
But
so
I've
heard it many times.
Why don't you read your definition? Because I know last time we did this, there was actually a disagreement on the actual definition passed in motion. But so let's go ahead and read. Let's just read it.
Just so it's on the record. Congregate care facility, a development of five or more dwelling suites, which is planned, designed, and managed to include facilities and common space that maximize the residents' potential for independent living. The facility may be occupied by the elderly or persons with a disability. Direct services that are provided or made available may be located on or off-site and shall relate to the nutritional, social, recreational, housekeeping, and personal needs of the residents, and shall be provided
or made available at a level necessary to assist the residents to function independently. Direct services means, but is not limited to, meals, housekeeping services, transportation services, and planned recreational and social activities which may be provided to the residents directly or indirectly through independent vendors and providers or by the management of the congregate housing. Support services or social services, adult daycare services, and in-home services which the management of the congregate housing may assist the residents in providing and or obtaining at the request of the residents.
Okay, well then I have a question about that on follow-up. If it says it provides these services or, you know, on-site or through independent vendors, well, which is it are you guys planning on doing? And is it going to be additional cost to the residents to have these services? I think we've heard that it is. I just want to know for sure from you guys.
We assume that there will be a combination of services provided on and services provided off through an independent vendor. It all goes back to best price, really. Sometimes we can provide those services and do a better job than having an independent come in and do it, and sometimes they can do a better job, all in an effort to give the residents the very best quality of whatever it is they're requesting.
But you're not intending on having a kitchen and a dining room, or are you?
Actually, we will have dining and kitchen.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And just so you know, each unit, if you remember,
has its own kitchen.
But there will be a common.
So your intention is to deliver direct services, but you have not yet decided what those are. Is that essentially what I mean?
Well, we have the parameters of that. But what we're really here today is to get our preliminary approval for the packet. You know, we've had this discussion with City Council. We've had the discussions prior to. I'm just saying. We've already established those things. We are going to do what we say we're going to do. We've indicated what we're going to do on it, and we have integrity. But beyond that, that's what the approval is the congregate care facility.
The other thing is this is all subject to a development agreement, which will include a conditional use permit.
Right.
These are all conditional uses, so this can all be spelled out when that permit is issued.
Mm-hmm.
But this is preliminary plan here. This is not our final plan. But that's what needs to be, people need to realize, and that's one thing that I think hasn't been put out there, is this is a conditional use. There will be a conditional use permit issued by the city that will spell out, you know, how, you know, it's like the Walmart. They don't have parking lot sales because their conditional use permit does not allow for parking lot sales. So that's where we spell that stuff out.
I know I'm beating this dead horse. I'm just beating it and such. I think every time you've come before me, I've asked for a list of services you intend to offer, and you've yet to provide at least even one. Even once
we did.
Yeah, during the discussion, but not part of your actual application. And I've basically indicated that I personally, and I'm in the minority here, but I know it's not required, but they still could provide it nonetheless.
Yeah.
Is just in spirit of full disclosure and those sorts of things.
Well, we have. We've done that. And we're happy to provide another copy to you. We want to make sure that before we leave here tonight that we have met every criteria of the city. So when we go to Planning Commission, so in your discussions about the commercial buildings and et cetera, we want to make sure our application and what we're doing is in total compliance with your criteria, totally. On everything. So we want to make sure that when we take a packet to City Council that we have your approval, that we are taking them a package that is consistent and with the city's requirements.
So I went through the design guidelines with the packet and kind of went through, like they were saying, checking the box, because I'm not an attorney. So I've been reading a lot of, if you go to utahpropertyrights.gov, there's whole cases, all sorts of cases regarding land use, lots of land use planning information and stuff. So I've been going through that. And like I said, I'm not a lawyer, so it's a hard slog for me. But so anyway, the land use decisions are based on code and what's in our code. And we codified the design guidelines several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. They were added. The language was added into our city code that mentions the design guidelines. When Walmart came, they weren't really mentioned much in the code. So anyway, I went through the design guidelines pretty carefully with this packet, trying to make sure, you know, making sure that it met. And, you know, I mean, there, like I said, there's some things that, for example, in 4.3.2 talks about height. Height less than 35 feet, then you have to meet the setbacks that are listed above additional, above 35 feet, then the City Planning Commission may require additional setbacks. I noticed that they've kept it below the 35 feet, so that doesn't apply. 4.3.4, apparent mass large buildings shall be minimized. It says smaller buildings are encouraged. But with that language, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't say the large buildings are prohibited, and it doesn't say the smaller buildings are required. So without mandatory language in our code, I'm not, you know, I don't know where we...
Yeah, I think there's three areas that, in my mind, our design guidelines are where this project may not fit in, but I also state that these are not, as you stated, they're not specific. They're like intentions or visions, you know, vision of how we'd like it to be, or we would intend it to be this way. But wording of like required, for example.
Well, must and shall are words that are used a lot in code to require things, and we don't have a lot of those in our...
Right. I mean, just a couple of examples. I mean, the vision for this area is primarily to be a commercial zone to generate sales tax revenue. And this building doesn't do that. But it's not a requirement that it has to do that. It's just saying that's the intent and the vision of the city would be that it did that. But that's what we would like to see happen, but that's not what's required to happen.
Right, but then that's contradicted. That's one of our problems, is then it's contradicted when you go into our mixed-use office retail, which is to accommodate less intense uses than found in the neighborhood retail.
Right, and that was the other point.
Lower intensity may be due to size, scale, and height of the structure, or due to a less intense land use. This is obviously a less intense land use than a Walmart.
Right, and that's, yeah. And the intensity is open to interpretation. One person's intense is not intense to somebody else.
But we don't say what it is. And so then if you go into the Utah appellate court ruling, because zoning ordinances are in derogation of a property owner's common law right to unrestricted use of his or her property, provisions therein restricting property uses should be strictly construed, and provisions permitting property uses should be liberally construed in favor of the property owner. So, I mean, I've heard people say that, you know, I've never even met a SMART personally. So this is not a project that's near and dear to my heart at all. However, our job as the Planning Commission is to make sure that the development that occurs in the city meets the code and the ordinances that the city has established. And I think that's our job. If you go through and you look at these case laws, whenever there's ambiguities or vagueness, the courts will rule in favor of the property owner, as long as it's not in violation of the established code and ordinance. So that's my thing. I went through this really carefully because I was trying to find, you know, anything in their submittal that didn't meet our code. I didn't find anything that could. Some of it may or may not be within the spirit of it, but it didn't directly violate it. So that's my plea to the other commissioners, is if you've gone through it and found anything, that this is the place, this is where we need to let it be known so we can talk about it. Because that's the only way, you know, that's the only reason we can give.
There's different language in here, but I just, the one thing I'm struggling with is, the lack of commercial activity. I mean, we're going to approve some buildings that they may find a tenant for.
That was the big thing with Walmart. When Walmart came in, is they moved into this sub-district, into the mixed-use office retail, and the big argument was they're not allowed in that because they are that's a neighborhood retail use and should not be allowed in this lower intensity area. So now we're saying that this lower intensity use shouldn't be allowed because we want more retail?
Yeah, and there's also language in there that that this section here where the building is going to be is supposed to have less density than the other section as well. There's language to that.
Or less intense land use.
Right.
Which this is a less intense use than a retail.
Look, let me. I'm having a hard time understanding this one definition here. Maybe the group can help me. So in the design guidelines, it says here, and this is regards to the mixed use office retail subdistrict. When ancillary to a retail or office use, ancillary equals subordinate. Subordinate is less than 50% of any given structure. Residential is permitted only on the second level of the structures. I think the premise there was that commercial activity would be on the first floor and residential would be on the second floor.
You're misreading it, though, because if you go to the list of permitted uses, that only applies to residential attached units. That doesn't apply to assisted living convalescent home, which is what we are talking about. We are talking about, because of the finding of fact the city council made, we have to treat this as the assisted living item.
Right.
We cannot go down to the residential and say...
Right.
Okay. And I mean, it wasn't a unanimous vote by the council. Some felt that it was more residential than not, but that was the finding of fact that was made by the city council.
So I've used you for devil's advocate position there, because this was something that was raised up by one of the city council members as a concern.
Well,
and I just want to make sure I understood it in reading it, and I think your list is accurate, right? I mean, we're talking about assisted living essentially, care assisted living.
Well, and that was the point that was brought up when I listened to the audio of the December 2nd meeting. The question was, we either put the developer puts assisted living on this property. Or if the council finds that congregate care is substantially similar, they would consider doing congregate care. And the council voted 3-2, I believe it was, that congregate care is substantially similar to assisted living. Which is, if you look, it says, you know, since this is not an inclusive list, it does say if a use is found substantially similar, it can be treated as the item in the chart. That's in 3.2, the first paragraph of 3.2. Mm-hmm. So by that finding of fact the city council made, we are treating assisted living or congregate care as assisted living, and it is a permitted use for that subdistrict. Conditionally. I mean, yeah, conditionally in front of everybody. So I guess.
But requiring them to have a commercial pad could also be considered a conditional use?
No, because that's a different subdistrict. That's in the neighborhood retail subdistrict, so it's the rules are different for it. Then you've got to go to the neighborhood retail section.
Right.
And you'll notice this new building does fit very much just in the mixed office subdistrict. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'm probably in the category of I don't like what I hear, but I'm not necessarily, the guidelines accommodate what you've done here, but I don't know that it's done at least what I would like to see. I guess what I'm saying is this is our commercial zone, and we're going to put a big chunk of it in the residential building, and then we're going to have three outbuildings under the premise that you will find tenants. I don't know whether you're highly motivated to find tenants, I just don't know. I mean,
this is my
opportunity to speak to the developers. I mean, they're obviously in front of me. So I'm basically, what I'm saying is I would encourage them to consider, pulling up might be the wrong phrase, but making a larger commitment to these commercial buildings than just having them on paper here, and yes, we've got space for it.
That's already been done, and we'll continue.
Let me just make a comment. What we're paying for the land drives the commercial development to go. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And we're encouraged because the America First Credit Union started there. We're encouraged that they haven't started their little strip malls there, because we're all going to be fighting for the same people. And we're highly motivated to get the commercial going.
Good. And then just another thing, this is just for the information of the commission, the state, the guidelines given on land use. So the interpretation of ordinance starts with the language of the ordinance, and the purpose of the ordinance is intended to promote. Although local governments have some discretion to control land use, a property's owner's right to the use and enjoyment of property must be honored. Decisions must be based on the objective standards and provable facts. It is inappropriate to inquire into the motivations and sincerity of a property owner or the nature and timing of a property acquisition. And I was reading a case where that was a land use decision was overturned because the decision was based on the fact that, well, we don't feel like these guys negotiated in good faith. And they said, yeah, that is inappropriate to inquire as the motivations and sincerity of the property owner, which I know we don't like, but that was the way the appellate court ruled.
And I'll read one sentence from here as well, since there's so many contrary and this is our own design guidelines. It says here in our design guidelines, while the intent of this plan, the guidelines, is to provide standards for approval, it is not intended to be so rigid as to deny all flexibility and latitude that may be necessary for individual users within the plan area.
Anyway, I just wanted, if there were any objections that were, you know, discrepancies that you guys had found that I hadn't seen, I just wanted to make sure those were brought up, because this is the place to do it, and this is the time to do it.
Yeah, the last thing on my list, and I think I'm done, is it's just an observation that the 55 plus requirements allows for 20% of the units to be the people that are not 55 years old. You know, if we have 291 units, that means like 58 units conceivably could be rented to people that are not 55 years of age, at least one occupant in that building. My point is that the nearby elementary school probably will feel some impact. Most likely there will be a certain number of families in there. Even a 55 unit occupied person may have children in their home. Happens all the time. So I'm just raising it. I'm not saying it's a requirement. It's not even a requirement. It's just an observation. Because some people tell there'll be absolutely no impact on the local schools. And there may be, depending on your occupants, whether it's going to be a higher than 80% ratio or not.
I believe that it's prohibited to have anyone under 19 living there. Isn't that part of that?
I got the master in the back. That's right. And you're correct. There will be no
discriminating against children here under that federal guideline. So 18. Yeah, no one under the age of 18, I believe. Maybe it's 19. I thought it was
19. It's under the age of 19.
Okay.
That's part of the HOPA regulation.
Regulations. That's federal fair housing. Yeah, that comes from the federal government. That's not.
Yeah.
That.
Based on my elementary experience, I may have qualified for that.
Yeah.
Any
there
other
might
question?
Be one person out there that hasn't graduated elementary school yet.
Just teasing. Shouldn't poke fun.
Any other questions or comments?
Oh, sure. I think from our side, Mr. Chair, we're primarily interested in just understanding, clear understanding that what we have presented does in fact meet all of your requirements, and that we are 100% in compliance with this preliminary plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one comment.
Go ahead.
Comment for me, Don? Or
no, okay. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to phase it. We have people on the commission who have who are local residents that adjoin or nearly adjoin this property, who make who ought to in the interest of full disclosure explain their where they live. That notwithstanding, our job as a commission is to judge the project in accordance with the ordinances. The city council may and probably does and will handle the political issues of this development. But our job is to say whether this meets the intent, and like the old umpire, they ain't nothing until we calls it. You know, it's not a strike or a ball. until we decide what it is. And I think that we approach our job pretty much that way, that we have ordinances that we had to propose to the city for approval. So we're intimately involved in the ordinances, and our job is to define and present what those ordinances are if there are cases where there's an ambiguity. I think we've, it's my opinion that we have been diligent in reviewing these applications over the years in accordance with the ordinances, and while that sometimes gets us into trouble with the council as being plan stampers, all we have rubber stamp and we approve everything that comes to us, which is absolutely not true. It's a myth that's generated by others. We are working very hard to see that these ordinances are represented in our projects. With that stated, then I'll yield to the chairman and see if we can get a motion.
Chairman, can we recognize who's voting tonight? Did we ever do that? Did you do that earlier?
No, it's the normal five.
Normal five.
Yeah, the five that are supposed to vote. We're all here.
Yeah, so do we need to recognize an alternate?
There is no alternate date necessary. One, two, three, four, five. We have five here. And that. Any other questions or comments? Our meeting started tonight at 7 o'clock. We asked for public comment. There was nobody signed up for it. We tried to move public hearing to this stage of the game. It was turned down by the Planning Commission, and we closed a public hearing. So there will be nothing further said about that this evening. If you have a problem, you can go before the City Council when this comes before them. At this point, I would entertain a motion to either reject or accept the preliminary plan.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion. I would move that we recommend to the City Council, and I'm just going to read off of what staff wrote here. Recommend to the City Council the site plan, engineering plans, architectural elevations, drainage plans, lighting plans, traffic study, and all other engineering and drawings related to the proposed Rosegate Congregate Care Facility located at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive, submitted to the Planning Commission to the City Council, including adopting the previous determination by the City Council made on December 2nd, 2014, that the congregate care use of the facility, as explained by the applicant, is substantially similar to the assisted living use allowed in the mixed-use office retail zone for the subject property.
Do I hear a second?
I second.
Further comment or questions? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion passes.
Thank you for your time tonight. We know how hard these kind of decisions are, but thank you.
Next item on our agenda is approval of the minutes from June 30th, 2015 Special Planning Commission meeting. I hope you've all had the opportunity to review that, and I would entertain a motion to approve it. Why don't we just adjourn for 5 minutes until everybody clears out?
I move we adjourn for 5 minutes.
Second.
Aye.
Aye. That's a good one, too.
The minutes of the June 30th Special Planning Commission meeting. I would entertain a motion to approve of this of these minutes. I conclude most of you have seen them. There they are.
I move that we approve the minutes of the previous meeting.
The June 30th, 2015.
June 30th, 2015.
I second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next item on here is discussion of the conceptual plans to subdivide Fred Levine's property located at 3939 West, 4000 North on PR2 planning residential zone. Chandler.
All right. As you recall, we had Mr. and Mrs. Fred and Trudy Levine come to a planning commission meeting, I want to say about May, I believe it was. Yeah, May 26, 2015. And we were back in the conference room back here. Mr. Levine owns about an acre parcel and would like to subdivide it to put a lot in the back. Now, the crux has always been on the improvements that would be necessary when you do a subdivision. Anytime we have a subdivision, we make the developer put in all of the requirements and bring that subdivision up to what would be the current city standards. So, for example, we talked about Lakeview Trails, which is on Canyon Road, which is actually being called Lake Shore Trails now. But when there's no sidewalk along Canyon Road. As part of the development process there, that subdivision has to be brought up to current city code. So there's going to be a sidewalk there. There's going to be sidewalk found throughout the property because it is all public drives. Mr. Levine lives kind of in that Swiss cheese area where it's, you can throw a dart and it could be Pleasant Grove or Cedar Hills, depends on where the dart lands. His neighbor to the east is in Pleasant Grove. His neighbor to the west is in Cedar Hills. His neighbor to the north is in Pleasant Grove. His neighbor to the south is in Cedar Hills. So he's kind of in a really strange spot.
The road in front of his house is Pleasant Grove.
The part of it.
Yeah, part of it.
Part of it is.
Part of it's not.
There's a part that's not. So he wants to subdivide his property. Now, there's certain topographic issues that come into play here. If you've driven by his property or are familiar with it at all, it's kind of the choke point on that road as you drive up to Canyon Road, and there's a series of big shrubs. There's a big tree. There's a couple of telephone poles. Those telephone poles are used not only by Rocky Mountain Power but also by Comcast. Mr. Levine, as I've met with him on a number of occasions, and he's gone out and gotten bids for these improvements, or what it would take to put in a sidewalk and what it would take to redo that asphalt to make that road up to city specs. And the actual total cost, which was quite expensive, came out to be about $80,000 to $90,000 to put in the necessary improvements. Much of that is involving removing, regrading, putting in retaining walls, putting in sidewalks, moving the poles, and resplicing the Comcast lines to new lines and or burying any of those utilities. This certainly makes developing that property in the way or the manner that Mr. Levine is proposing, it's very prohibitive. However, in my meetings with Mr. Levine, I've consistently reiterated that myself and this body are required to follow code, where, you know, the previous discussion we just had was centered around, does this meet code? And this body felt that it did. This is kind of the same issue. Does the proposal meet code? He's proposing to do this without having to put in those improvements. Which certainly would make it financially feasible for him. I've told him that in order to get a variance, in order to get any sort of variance to not have to do that those improvements, that would have to come from the Board of Adjustment. And the Board of Adjustment can only hear his case pending a denial. And since I can't issue that denial, it has to come from this body or the city council. So really, tonight, we're here to look at this concept plan and the merits behind it and say, where do you go from here, Mr. Levine?
Was it to have been noticed as a line of discussion item for that to happen, or does it matter?
It's a concept. Was it noticed as a discussion?
Yeah. I don't think it was intended to be that way.
No, it wasn't.
This recommendation review.
It was supposed to be review action, okay, actually. This is one that.
He's not here.
That may be why he's not here.
There would have been a public hearing.
Not on a concept plan. We have to have a public hearing at some point during the whole process, not necessarily during the concept plan.
He's not here because he's at the age where you forget things.
Yes,
he wouldn't mind me saying that because I know him.
Him and his wife are very, very nice, and they've been very easy to work with. It's just I understand this financial obstacle in developing his property.
So the sidewalk, I'm just on Google, or it looks like the sidewalk comes up right to the
yes. That sidewalk is in Cedar Hills. And that's our argument saying, look, we're not asking you to put in an isolated sidewalk only in front of your property. It's a continuation of a sidewalk from the west.
Okay. So when that developer of six or seven homes submitted their development, they were required.
Yes, that development to the west is Page Lane. It was developed by Jared Osmond, who lives down in that area. Page Lane is a private drive, so I don't know if there are sidewalks in the cul-de-sac itself, because it is a private drive, so that's not required. So you'll find the same thing on Landon Court and on Mountaintop Trails. Those are cul-de-sacs off of Canyon Road. It's a private road. So if you were to look at the county, the cul-de-sac itself is owned by one of the homeowners there. So it's in their name because it's a private road. However, 44,000 North is a public road, so it doesn't necessarily, you can't do the same, no sidewalk there. In other instances, the city has allowed for surety bonds where there's no adjacent sidewalk.
Yeah, like Hewitt.
Yeah, on Canyon Road. They have an surety bond that when a sidewalk can or will be placed, there's a bond in place to put that in. That's not necessarily the same here. Because there would be one section of sidewalk in front of one home that doesn't connect to any other sidewalk. And especially on Canyon Road, where there's always a discussion of pending improvements on that road, it would be unfair to make them pay to put in a sidewalk and then immediately tear it out while that road gets improved. So there's an surety bond. So it's a little different of a case there.
So what we basically have to do here, since he's got approximately $90,000 he's got to invest in his property before it can be split or in any way, shape, or form, is to basically say, I'm sorry, we're going to turn this down because you do not meet our criteria and our ordinances. Then it would go to the Board of Adjustment. They would make a decision to
grant a variance. And it's not so much, please hear my plea. There's certain requirements that the state gives. There's five requirements that the applicant needs to meet in order to get a variance. And at that point, let's say that it was successful before the Board of Adjustment. He'd come back with the proposal without the sidewalk, saying, I've received a variance from the Board of Adjustment. However, because it wasn't noticed correctly, it wasn't noticed as a review action, this is just going to be a discussion. And I'm actually kind of happy that it's just a discussion, because I would really like to have him here for any vote. But are there any questions on this? And I've told him this, like, it's got to go to the Planning Commission in order to get denied so that you can go to the Board of Adjustment. So he's aware of that.
I have a question. On the east side of the property, they're showing, will that be a private lane?
It's a driveway.
Yeah, flag. It's a flag lot.
It'd be a flag lot. So okay. It'd have to be a 20-foot wide drive there.
Will he be able, from a safety standpoint, does it meet the requirements?
It's our flag lot requirement.
Yeah.
And it's within that?
Yeah.
So he's meeting every requirement.
He's meeting the requirements other than the subdivision improvements themselves.
So if he doesn't do the improvements and he gets a variance, then at some point the city has to come in and make those improvements.
Eventually.
That's a PG. Is that? That's a Cedar Hill Street or PG?
No. It's mostly Pleasant Grove.
Actually, if you go out there, this is really interesting. His property line pins are almost in the center of the lane. On the southbound, on the south end, on the south lane, his pins are in the asphalt for his property. So if he were to do the subdivision, there would have to be a street dedication there going back to the street right away, which is probably 10, 15 feet.
Which probably needs to happen when he subdivides. I mean, that would have to happen when he subdivides.
Right.
Another option available to him, which I would hate to see him exercise, is he could abdicate to the city of Pleasant Grove. He could leave our city.
He was proposing to me the option of possibly taking his house and moving that to Pleasant Grove and keeping the flag lot in Cedar Hills. But that wouldn't work because then his house would be an island.
He couldn't do that.
We have plenty of those in my neighborhood.
An island? Well, they're contiguous in some way.
Yeah, there are two, but they're completely surrounded by Well, yeah, that's right. They go over to Dan Stewart. That's right. They go Dan Stewart ties them in. Yeah, they're peninsulas. Yeah. Long peninsulas, so several blocks.
It's a really, if you've ever seen a map, I hope you have.
Wedgwood is a PG street that leaves a Cedar Hills Road and ends on a Cedar Hills Road. But it's a Pleasant Grove Road.
And it's a Pleasant Grove sewer line that connects into other Cedar Hills sewer lines.
Sewer line, but it's PG to that road.
This surety bond you mentioned earlier, is that an option for him?
No, I don't believe it is. Because the surety bond in the case of Canyon Road was there was no improvements to connect to, whereas he's got improvements to connect to. Where the idea is if eventually in a utopian society, when that road is all in Cedar Hills, we can widen that road and make it a little bit safer to go up and down. Especially I know there's a lot of people that come from Canyon Heights and go down to Deerfield. It's a really dangerous road because of how narrow it is. And his home right there is kind of the choke point as you head east. It's kind of the choke point where it gets really narrow. By making each person as they subdivide or do anything, make those improvements, eventually the road will be a much safer road.
So do we have to turn down this concept in order for him to go to the Board of Adjustments, or can he go to the Board of Adjustments without being turned down?
I think he needs to be turned down. I think there needs to be some legislative decision in order to go to the Board of Adjustment.
What's the plan for these Monts and Lanes, Swims and Gyms?
Explain what you mean by plan.
I mean, because they're both disastrous. I mean, I've had two neighbors that have been hit waiting to turn in to the upper. I don't know if it's Swens or Jens, whichever the upper one is, the northern one.
I think that one's Jens.
I've had two neighbors that have been Jens. Hit. You know, they stopped to turn. Somebody could find them. They wanted to get 50 miles an hour.
Going on Canyon Road?
Yeah. They were turning left off of Canyon Road.
It's hard because those roads, the visibility as you turn onto Canyon Road is really limited because
they were on Canyon Road waiting to turn.
Oh.
And someone just came into the back. Both times, someone came into the back of them, full speed.
Well, there's no shoulder to turn off.
There's no center turn lane.
There's no center turn lane, and there's no shoulder to turn off on.
So what is the plan for these?
It's hard to say that there's a plan, and I say that because there isn't a plan, and that's because it's split between jurisdictions. So one jurisdiction wants to keep it a country lane, and one jurisdiction wants to make it wider,
a real road.
So where it's neither here nor there, nothing's going to happen right now.
Is there anywhere in the code or the guidelines or any of our founding documents that would provide a pathway for him, for us to approve, you know, to require these requirements, but only if and when the road is improved and expanded?
That's what the surety bond does. That kicks in at the time of the...
Right. I mean, other than the surety bond, is there...
I haven't seen any vehicle that allows that. And I've done a lot of brainstorming with David Bunker, with Mr. Lean. I've visited him on his property on a few occasions looking at it. And I understand the difficulty associated with putting in a sidewalk. There's the road and there's a shrub, but it just dips off. And it's really kind of a perfect storm of everything that could go wrong with having to put a sidewalk in. Mm-hmm. So I get his frustration. I do. It's just looking at it and looking at the limitations on what you can approve and can't approve, I'm having a hard time coming up with a route that doesn't make him put in that sidewalk.
So that's a good question. If I understand your question correctly, Dave, there's really what I hear you saying in response is there really isn't a way for us to approve what he wants to do.
I don't know how you approve it without setting
precedent.
I hate to say setting a precedent. It kind of sets a precedent, but I don't think that past mistakes should dictate that future city decisions, saying we've made a mistake in the past that so we have to make mistakes future going on because it's a precedent. But it does set a bad example for future development.
I mean, my opinion, and I think I voiced it last time, was the route that you said that we probably have to refuse it. I don't know if you can say refuse with sympathy, but
we can be sympathetic to it, but
he can know we're sympathetic to him, and there is a process by which he can still move forward.
Well, and I've sat down and talked with him and given him the Board of Adjustment application and gone through that. I really sat down with him on a number of occasions. He's come into the office and we've gone through his project, gone through his proposal. You know, and I've bounced a number of ideas off of, you know, the city engineer and him and Mr. Levine himself. And it's hard to find a route that doesn't include putting in a sidewalk.
That subdivision we talked about a moment ago that doesn't have a sidewalk, you said was privately?
The road itself is a private.
Sidewalk on the road.
Right, but not in the subdivision.
Not in the cul-de-sac, because the cul-de-sac, the road, the asphalt is privately held. It's not a city street.
Right, because I know Red Levine supposedly claims that part of the road in front of his house is owned by himself.
He's not claiming it. It is.
Right. So does that mean he lives on a private lane?
No. No. In many cases, it's established that private home ownership goes to the center lane. That's fairly common in developments. In this case, typically, there's been a fly in this room all night long.
Yeah, there's been more than one.
It's really annoying. In the case of Cedar Hills, we require on these types of roads that they be they're public streets. So there would be a dedication to the city for those properties, or for that section of asphalt in front of the home.
Yes, there's someone standing there. You're welcome to come in.
Okay, just see a that reflection there in the window.
Okay. Could you do a rolled curb and sidewalk and move the whole thing forward on the property?
When you say
some of these trees have got to go anyway.
Move the whole thing forward. What do you mean?
Well, you could do a rolled curb, not a step curb, and then move right into a sidewalk. Put the sidewalk at the very front of the.
Well, the problem with that is
it doesn't necessarily have to meet up with that sidewalk.
Well, it's got to meet the city's specs for right of way, and that's the issue.
Right. We had talked before about possibly building an alternative sidewalk on his property, so that somebody could move through his lot, but it would not meet.
Yeah, so if you look at this line coming into his property is the existing sidewalk. That circle there, there's literally a telephone pole right where the sidewalk, dead center where the sidewalk is supposed to continue on. And that's actually the biggest cost that would be incurred is right there, that telephone pole is being used by Comcast, and one of the bids he got was, where is it? It was, they bid him at $22,500 to go and resplice their lines on that pole. So that's where
is
you
that
start
where
looking.
Is that where the easement is? Are they in there? I guess are there poles in the proper place in their easement?
Is there a pole in the proper place?
Yeah.
Well, I would assume it is. Yeah.
Wondering there.
I assume that pole predates that sidewalk by quite some time. So the other bid he got was for it was $2,000 for the removing of the trees and the shrubs. There would need to be by digging up all that existing ground. There would need to be he would need to relay his water, his culinary water, his secondary water, and the sewer. So he's almost having to redo all of his own utility extensions into that road. It literally is like the perfect storm. Right there.
And is that irrigation line that runs through there? That's not a ditch, is it?
It's a line.
It's a pipe. The pipe ditch is on the other side.
The pipe ditch, it's piped part of the way. That's Pleasant Grove Irrigation. Right. It's right across the street. It's piped. And then as you hit just a little bit, a couple lots to the east, it's just an open ditch, open swell.
It opens up again when you get down on the
cows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it heads north as you head to the Dennis Thane property, which is just adjacent.
So the irrigation line shown on his drawing is just a PI line?
Yeah.
That's box is an electrical distribution?
That would just be his meter box.
That's his.
It's a meter box or is it a control box?
I believe it's his PI box. Either way.
I mean,
whatever's
right
there
the
has
driveway.
To move, because that you can see that would then become asphalt based on his drawing. So, but where this is Where this wasn't noticed as a review action, and I would actually prefer that he be here.
We're having the same discussion we had last time.
We're kind of spinning our wheels here.
Which will have a third time when he when it comes to actual.
But you'll be ready for it then. So
he is going to be disappointed, by the way, that it wasn't noticed the way he.
Well, I kind of want him to be here anyway, so I'm not terribly.
So why don't we just table it?
So you can tell him no to his face.
Well, no, we open up a path for him to get approval.
Well, I mean, then I don't just call him tomorrow and say they said no. He's here for the discussion. So, I mean, I met with him last Thursday with David Bunker and Mayor Gigi to go over this, and we talked about this meeting tonight and how we'd have it on the agenda, but it's my fault I didn't catch that it was said discussion, not review action. So that one's on me.
So either way. We discussed it, and then he needs to be here.
Okay.
Next item on here is discussion on scheduling a special meeting to review the commercial guidelines. Theoretically, that should be our next to the last time with those guidelines. We have open September's next month. You have Tuesday the 8th, Thursday the 10th, or Thursday the 17th. Which would be best for you people?
Not the 10th.
Yeah, I serve on the golf committee, which meets on Thursday nights. They might still be meeting in September.
They will be meeting.
So if we could avoid Thursday, I would be able to attend.
Yeah, I've got a graduate banquet. I have to attend.
What about the 8th then, September 8th?
It works for me.
Got piano lessons that day, but other than that, I think I'm free.
Okay, our next meeting then, special meeting, will be the 8th of September, Tuesday.
Chandler. We will have city council meeting on our calendars for that day, which I know isn't the first Tuesday, but I'm wondering if that changed for some reason.
Oh, because it's Labor Day.
So we had council meeting on the 8th.
So I guess
scratch that.
Well, Monday's Labor Day.
And Thursday, you have golf meeting. Somebody, how about Thursday the 10th?
Golf.
What
if it was, can we meet earlier? Yeah. We always talk about 7 o'clock, but the golf committee typically doesn't meet until 8.
That's true.
So what if this was at 6? 6 o'clock?
6:30?
I definitely cannot meet on the 10th at all.
So what if it was 6 o'clock on the 17th?
Yes.
Or on 6:30.
The rush is, I'd really like to, I've been informed that Mr. Dodge and Mr. Steele are not re-upping with us next year. I'd really like to have a public hearing on this in November and send it off to the council and be done rather than having new eyes come in and start from square one. I'd really like to wrap this up with this group.
You want to train a new group?
Okay.
I don't.
Thursday the 17th at 6 p.m. Does that sound good to everybody?
Yeah. Can I just put a bug in everyone's ear maybe? Just one item that keeps coming up that we have not looked at in our guidelines, and that's the notion of density. Hmm. So something maybe to think about.
On that note, density as well as scale.
Yeah.
Scale is another thing that is discussed but not defined.
A lot of what we're doing right now is modifying existing language, but where there is no language really
mentioned.
Well, and I think one of the other things that we need to look at is where the design guidelines do use the word may or can or preferred. It's very ambiguous. There's probably very more. I guess there's probably more certain terms that can be used, shall, will, that will tighten that up and not give so much leeway. I don't know how much leeway you want to leave in there.
Well, that's the thing. I talked to somebody who's on the planning commission when the design guidelines were developed. And he said there was no plan. It was just all empty fields. There was no plan, and they didn't want to lock in, you know what I mean, because it was all in the future, and there was nothing, you know.
But the state regulations have changed since then, and that's the problem, is where the design guidelines were initially adopted, you know, 2002, I don't know what it was, 2000, they originally adopted early. What was it? It was 2000 and then 2004 they were amended. The state regulations regarding a conditional use were changed, where it used to be very ambiguous and the cities had a lot of leeway. I think it was in 2006 that the state code regarding a conditional use really took a lot of that leeway away from cities and said, no, if the project can mitigate all of these conditions, all these uses, like the lighting, the noise, the traffic, the parking, these things that have a negative impact on the community, if they can't do that, if they can't mitigate that, you can deny them. If they can, then the city doesn't have a whole lot of leeway there. So the design guidelines were written prior to that determination.
But I think the size and stuff was left out purposefully because there was nothing before the measurement.
But I think it's still worth having discussion.
No, I'm not saying I was just giving the background. I haven't talked to someone who's on there.
I think that the council and Councilman Reese can clarify this. I think the council will want the Planning Commission to have had a discussion on density, especially. Yes.
Yes.
That's come up. Yes. So.
And I would say if there's anything in our current conditional use table that should no longer be there.
Yeah. So we've talked about the conditional use table. We really overhauled it, which I think was good. But so please just do some homework on that and the remaining sections, and then we'll hopefully get that done.
Can I just, by way of reminder, I think Aldis got an email sometime back about training on land use policy. And just by way of reminder, that meeting is this month on the 27th.
That's the one that's in Pleasant Grove,
Pleasant
right?
Pleasant Grove, 6:30 p.m.
Is that one done by Meg Ryan? Not the Meg Ryan, but a
Meg Ryan. Just by way of reminder.
That's on the August
27th. Yeah, I guess I probably do.
I'm showing 6 to 7:30 on the 27th.
6:30 to 8 p.m. is what I...
They're really sharp. I've attended a few of her trainings. She's really good.
Where's it at?
Pleasant Grove's...
86 East, 100 South, unless that got changed.
It's the one that's going down Canyon Road on the west side of the road.
The what? The city building?
It's Pleasant Grove City Building.
100 South, 86 East.
South of the library or something?
Okay, so we're set for the 17th Thursday at 6 p.m. for our special meeting. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Meeting is adjourned.